Jesus Christ is risen today, alleluia, a triumphant holy day.
Hello, this is Father David Nix, Padre Peregrino Podcast. I'm very glad to be joined today by Ruben Nava, retired L.A. County Sheriff. Ruben, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Father.
You know, there's a lot of priests and lay people out there who think that just because they're pro-life or maybe prefer receiving Holy Communion on the tongue, that makes them traditional Catholics. And, you know, if that's your test for traditional Catholicism, then you're just a well-behaved Vatican II Catholic instead of, I don't know, maybe a badly behaved Vatican II Catholic like Father James Martin. What I like about Ruben Nava is that he's a true traditional Catholic. And by that, I mean that he believes in what the apostles taught on faith and morals and liturgy. And I think we're coming to a point as we have all these churches on lockdown and everything else going on. I think that anyone in the USA left who actually cares about Catholicism right now has a choice to either be an apostolic Catholic or a slightly less offensive modernist. The full modernists are just going to get washed out. But in other words, there's no more fence riding. Either be an apostolic Catholic. I think that's a better term than traditional Catholic because people like to just use the term traditional Catholic as, I don't know, sort of a delicate insult against us. Really, the traditional Catholics I know are truly the apostolic Catholics, or just be a modernist Catholic, which will end in your kids being bad Catholics and your grandkids being atheists.
And just for your listeners, I've been attending the traditional Latin Mass since 1995, and I knew back then, and I was getting some sound teaching from, you know, my priest, and so he was feeding me a lot of good material, things that I hadn't been hearing at my Novus Ordo parish, and then sending me to, you know, retreats, 5 days silent Ignatian retreats with the SSPX priests. And so I was getting a steady diet of meat and potatoes and not, you know, just the hamburgers and fries. I was getting, you know, fed a good diet of solid Catholic teachings.
And, you know, right before we started, you called yourself a blue-collar Catholic. And, you know, that's what I like about you and Terry and Jesse. You may have heard Ruben. He's on Jesus 911 and Virgin Most Powerful Radio with Jesse Romero. And Jesse and I are going to be doing a podcast on his new book about Trump next week. But I was teasing Ruben before we started. Jesse's just a couple clicks behind becoming as traditional as Ruben here. Jesse's a great hero of mine. You're both great heroes of mine for different reasons. He's a great evangelist, and you've been in the Latin Mass for a while. But and the cool thing about Jesse, he's really moving towards the Latin Mass entirely. You know, why do you think that you got these two retired L.A. County sheriffs interested in the Latin Mass when that's sort of framed by people as kind of this delicate, these are the people who like a lot of Latin and lace. Why do blue-collar Catholics like the Latin Mass?
Well, I could speak for myself that I coming from a paramilitary organization, I like the precision of the movements. I like that there's no ad-libbing, that the liturgy is followed to a T. The priest is leading us. He's at the tip of the spear when he's facing Ad Orientem, and it's like the general leading his troops into battle. And
yeah,
I just saw that. It looked very militaristic, you know, all the way down to the vestments, you know, very crisp, you know, the vestments that are worn in the traditional masses. And you go to the Novus Ordo and you see them wearing, it looks like more of a poncho, you know. it's hard to take them seriously when I see some of the outfits. And, you know, we were really deprived of true Catholicism for so many years. And we just kind of went along to get along. And, you know, I remember watching a video. I don't recall the name of it, but it was showing all the things that had happened in Vatican II. It was done many years ago, so it was 40 years after the changes, and they were showing all the things that changed. And they said, had this been done all at one time, We would have rebelled. We would have not put up with it, you know, destroying the altar and the demolition of the altar rails and all the marble and moving the statues and taking out the tabernacle from the center. All these things, you know, moving the choir from the loft all the way up in front and center, so they're looking like they're entertaining us. All these things were done incrementally. And so you start buying into it. It's almost like the idea of a frog. You put a frog in a pot of boiling water, and he jumps out. But if you start with cold water, he stays in there, and you turn the fire up, eventually he cooks. He doesn't get out. And that's what right. we were doing as Catholics, you know, just putting up with it.
And, you know, that's a pretty good segue. What I'm going to have Ruben on today, I thought it'd be good to have a police officer speak against a police state, which we obviously don't have yet. And but I do want to talk about how this analogy of the frog being boiled in the water, where we're really approaching that as far as Catholic individual rights as we face either this pandemic or plandemic. And, you know, I know there's a lot of people when they hear about globalist police state and stuff, they think these are the people under this tinfoil hat who just look at the, you know, conspiracy theory websites. What I'm about to quote everybody here, this comes from Fox News. This isn't from InfoWars. This isn't from even something far to the right of InfoWars. This is Fox News, which of course is, you know, far to the right of CNN, but this isn't tin hat stuff. This is straight from Fox News. So Tucker Carlson had on Dr. Michael Ryan. Rather, he didn't have him on. He had a segment from Dr. Michael Ryan of the World Health Organization, who was saying in a news briefing, this is a direct quote from the WHO about how what we need to do as far as COVID-19 and the possibility of vaccines, the possibility of not only quarantining people, but force quarantining people, not just who have symptoms, but just even going into people's homes against their will. And if you think that's an exaggeration, listen to this quote from Dr. Michael Ryan at the WHO. He says, quote, "Now we need to go and look in families to find those people who may be sick and isolate them and remove them in a safe and dignified manner," close quote. This is where Tucker Carlson picks up and mocking says, quote, "Just so you know, we're coming to your house, seizing your children and, quote, isolating them in a safe and dignified manner," close quote. A friend of mine was physically attacked yesterday in a King Supers. Those are our supermarkets here in Denver. One of my friends was physically attacked by a group of middle-aged women because he didn't have on a mask.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And you know, so just so my listeners know where I'm going with this podcast, this isn't to say you're a bad Catholic if you wear a mask in public, or you're a bad Catholic if you're actually doing social isolating. But it is to say you're not a bad Catholic for refraining from those things. And we're going to talk about the numbers of a pandemic, and we're going to talk about how fear is used in a big state. As I've said on the last two podcasts, I believe COVID-19 is a real virus. I've known now two people tell me stories of people 1 or 2 degrees away from them who've died from it. But we have to put the numbers in perspective, and we have to consider the reality, even if we don't have time to talk about how this is probably biological warfare created in a lab, the possibility that this is being commandeered by the leftists and the globalists to set up a globalist police state where we are losing our rights. And this is where I thought it'd be good to have a police officer on who's actually against a police state to actually talk about these things. Now, my friend who was attacked, just to give you guys an idea why this isn't about the virus, why rather something besides the virus is behind the virus. One of the women who was yelling at him in a very diabolical manner said, "You're a white man with no effing SHIT on your face." And by SHIT, she meant a mask. So think of that line again. She yelled at him in this attack when all these women were ganging up on him. And he got it on video, and he's hopefully going to release it soon. I think it's going to go viral. She said, "You're a white man with no effing SHIT on your face." In other words, that disqualified him. So the fact that she linked white man to not having a mask shows that there's at the very minimum some virtue signaling going on in wearing the mask, and at the very maximum, a mark to show who is following the government and something behind the government on all of this. One more quote I want to throw out there before I see if you have anything to add on this. Bill Gates himself said, and again, this isn't, you know, a conspiracy theory website. Bill Gates himself said, "Eventually we will have some digital certificates to show who has recovered or been tested recently, or when we have a vaccine, who has received it," close quote. So Bill Gates himself, who is behind this, and remember, Fauci is on the Dr. Fauci is actually on the leadership board for the Gates Foundation, and Bill Gates is talking about digital certificates. All of these things that were just in dystopian movies a year ago, nobody thought we could have been at this point where every church would be closed down, abortion centers are still open, places where people find God, like the Grand Canyon, are closed down. So this is where we have to say there's something behind this virus, which is a real virus, but there's something behind it. Anything to add to that?
I agree with you. I think that, you know, when you look at what was going on at the time that the virus became known to us here, the economy was doing so well. We were ramping up for election year. You had in China, you had those students protesting from Hong Kong. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're wiped out and they're sent packing, and because China was using military force against them. And then this virus breaks out. And I also know that the FBI, they arrested a professor. I believe it was a Harvard professor that was they realized that he was receiving payments of $50,000 a month from China. And so they caught their eye, and during an investigation, and he was in charge of biochemistry, you know, so he was sending samples back to Wuhan, and two Chinese nationals were arrested flying out with vials of liquid, vials of, chemicals. And so there's an ongoing investigation, but that was, that was put out there in the news. You didn't hear it on regular TV. Of course, didn't hear it on the CNN and NBC and those stations, but I didn't expect that to.
So yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the Hong Kong riots, or rather protesters. They weren't even riots. The Hong Kong protesters, because someone I really trust who's been researching the possibility of this being biological warfare actually believes that this was originally intended. Actually, I don't think she'd mind her name being said, because she's my co-host on the podcast, Andromeda, who's half Chinese blood. Her mother is half Chinese. So anybody who says this is racism it's crazy, because she's actually had her finger on the pulse of this, the possibility of this being biological warfare for a month or two before COVID went big. And she believes that this was created in a Wuhan lab. She thinks they didn't mean for it to be a fatal biological agent, but it was probably intended for them. Now, as I look at it, I can't help but think that maybe the same people who created this are also behind a global panic, as they're talking about vaccines. And this is where we're going to get to this later. So not to put too many things on the back burner here. But here in Colorado, I want to read everybody a quote here. Here in Colorado, Representative DeGette, she's a Democratic congresswoman living here in Colorado. She tweeted this out, quote, "The Trump administration refuses to lift its baseless restrictions on human fetal tissue research, which is preventing our nation's scientists from advancing studies to find treatments and cures for coronavirus. We're calling on HHS Secretary Azar to immediately lift these restrictions," close quote. So right there, you know, it's funny when the leftists actually show their cards. Right there, she's admitting that we need to kill babies to save a few people here. But Ruben, what I want to get back to is this line that was on Fox News with Tucker Carlson, with Dr. Michael Ryan, who again said, quote, "Now we need to go and look in families to find these people who may be sick and isolate them and remove them in a safe and dignified manner." Can you tell our listeners just what rights they have as far as Catholics to defend their home and defend their persons and defend their families?
I'm going to tell you right now, as a father, if somebody tried to take my children out of there, they'd be looking down the barrel of a 12 gauge. They're not going to take my children out by force. And even the Fourth Amendment, it's there to protect us. It's to deny the national government the authority to make general searches and seizures of property. The major issue over the years has been to the interpretation of the unreasonable searches and seizures, but the rules, you know, can be complicated, but they also change often. But the general principle is that searches are valid methods of enforcing law and order, but unreasonable searches are prohibited. And so the people have the right, Father, to be secure in their persons, their houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures. And they shall not be violated, and no warrants shall be issued but upon probable cause. Mm-hmm. Supported by the oath of affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. And I have, in my career, I've probably served over, I figured it out, it's over 400 search warrants or arrest warrants. I've been going through doors for years and years and years. So you never know what's on the other side of that door. But we had to have probable cause unless we had exigent circumstances where we saw that a crime was being committed, or for the destruction of evidence, which would be exigent. But we would have to have a warrant signed by a magistrate.
That's right. And, you know, I ran as an EMT in Boston and a paramedic in Denver, I ran 80% of my calls with the police. And so you know what it's like to run with, it was at LAFD who ran EMS for you guys, or did you have a third party agency out there in the county?
We had LA County Fire, usually had paramedics.
Yeah. Who transported for you guys in LA or in the county outside of LA City?
They had some ambulance companies like AMR.
AMR. Oh, we used to call them another moron responds. Hopefully they did a good job. But see, the only people we could ever strap to our pram, and I mean, I'll be honest, I had to restrain people probably twice a week if I was on a night shift, because as you know, there's tons of people who were drunk and high, and we could strap them to the pram, or sometimes they were handcuffed to the pram because of crimes they had committed. But this was people who were drunk, high, and injured, who were just trying to get out of an ambulance, right? So if you're drunk, high, injured, a criminal, you lose some rights. The only other people who weren't those that we actually could use any type of force against would be, I remember like we had to wrestle a diabetic to the ground, shoot him with some D50, which is sugar, and the guy came back and we released him before without transporting him. Obviously suicide attempts, you kind of lose some rights. We had some rights as paramedics to stop suicidal people and transport them against their will. But here's the thing. Never in EMS, never in emergency medical services were we ever allowed to transport someone against their will simply because of symptoms. Honestly, if even if someone was having a heart attack and talking to us, they technically had the right to refuse transport. Now, we had some what we call verbal judo tricks to get them. You know, if we had an old Korean war vet saying we're not going, we'd say, okay, well, we could take you to Presbyterian St. Luke's or St. Joseph's, you know, try to let him have some choices. Yes. You know, we had tricks. But ultimately, we in EMS could never, ever enter someone's home unless we heard, say, you know, a child was shot or something. And then we obviously had SWAT or police. I was only on scene with SWAT once, actually. But obviously, police would go in first. Some EMS departments actually wait for a scene secure. Most Denver paramedics do not. And, you know, so on very, very rare occasions can you actually lose your rights before a police department and emergency medical services. What this guy at WHO is talking about is absolute insanity, that suspicion of a symptom of a non-tested disease could bring the authorities to inside your house to remove them, quote, in a dignified manner. Yeah, right. No one, everybody knows that's not going to be done in a dignified manner. So what I'd like to do now, since we're calling this podcast Catholic Self-Defense Against a Globalist Police State, I want to look at St. Thomas Aquinas on self-defense. This is the second part of the second part, question 64, article 7. St. Thomas quotes Exodus 22, verse 2, quote, if a thief be found breaking into a house or undermining it and be wounded so as to die, he that slew him shall not be guilty of blood, close quote. But this continues with St. Thomas. Now, it is much more lawful to defend one's life than one's house. Therefore, neither is a man guilty of murder if he kill another man in self-defense of his own. St. Thomas Aquinas continues, and yet, though proceeding from a good intention, an act may be rendered rendered unlawful if it be out of proportion to the end. Wherefore, if a man in self-defense uses more than necessary violence, it will be unlawful. Whereas, if he repel force with moderation, his defense will be lawful, because according to the jurists, it is lawful to repel force by force, provided one does not exceed the limits of a blameless defense. Nor is it necessary for salvation that a man omit the act of moderate self-defense in order to avoid killing the other man, since one is bound to take more care of one's own life than of another's. But as it is unlawful to take a man's life except for the public authority acting for the common good, as stated above, it's not lawful for a man to intend killing a man in self-defense except for such as have public authority. So this is essentially what St. Thomas Aquinas is saying. Let me summarize that. It's not sinful to kill someone breaking into your house, but it would be wrong to intend killing him if you can use proportionate means to stop him, shooting him in the kneecaps or whatever else. And I know you guys in the police department are always told you never shoot in the kneecaps or whatever, because you have to shoot to kill if you actually have reasonable cause to pull your weapon. But what does this have to do with a police state? Okay, we have to remember when we talk about the proportionate terms of St. Thomas Aquinas and him giving public authority more authority than a single individual. He wrote this before the Third Reich. He wrote it before communism. He wrote it before automatic weapons being used in the hands of a police state. And all my listeners should know that communists killed their own people in the 20th century at a rate of, or at numbers between 100 and 150 million people. The first thing they did was disarm them, of course. So this really calls into question this whole well, it doesn't call into question. We can actually apply St. Thomas Aquinas perfectly with his terms proportionate means to stop an unjust aggressor, while we just have to add on to this the possibility that that unjust aggressor could be a police state, as the 20th century really did prove with communism. One of the things I want to add to this, people aren't usually going to hear me quote the New Catechism, but I do like section 2242 to 2243. This is from the New Catechism, and it's on civil disobedience. It says, when citizens are under the oppression of a public authority which oversteps its competence, they should still not refuse to give or to do what is objectively demanded of them by the common good. But it is legitimate for them to defend their own rights and those of their fellow citizens against the abuse of this authority within the limits of the natural law and the good of, and the law of the gospel. Listen closely, everybody. Armed resistance to oppression by political authority is not legitimate unless all of the following conditions are met. I'm going to read you these five. One, there is certain grave and prolonged violation of fundamental rights. Two, all other means of redress have been exhausted. Three, such resistance will not provoke worse disorders. Four, there is well-founded hope of success. And five, it is impossible reasonably to foresee any other better solution. Close quote. That's Catechism of the Catholic Church, released under Pope John Paul II in 1993. That's number 2242 to 2243. So, Ruben, before I hand the microphone off to you to see if you have anything to say on this, I want to make it clear, we're not at that point in this country. I mean, people, I was watching Cuomo, who I don't like at all, but I was watching Cuomo on Fox News yesterday, who has admitted that even in New York City, the numbers of COVID-19 have plateaued off. Now, of course, everyone's saying, well, it might surge up again and stuff. We are not seeing a police state yet. We're not seeing what WHO has said. We're not seeing these forced vaccinations that, you know, what Bill Gates has brought to Africa and sterilized people against their will. We have not seen that happen in the United States yet. So I want to make it clear, none of these five things have been met for any of the Catholics out there to pull weapons on the police. Obviously, I'm saying no Catholics should do that. But I do want people to think of this. The very first thing that was done in Croatia, Cambodia, everywhere where communism took over, one of the very first things that happened was the disarmament. And as you said earlier, the frog boiling in the water, Ruben. And think of the Third Reich. Think of Kristallnacht. I mean, they really started very, very slowly at saying, okay, well, the Jews have to close their stores because otherwise it's going to cause violence. You know, it usually starts at very, very minimal acts to actually take away our individual rights. So this is where I'm just telling Catholics to realize we're not there yet. But we are seeing some things. I was watching a video today of someone in Germany was arrested for not social distancing. I'm sure you saw out there in L.A., Ruben, that paddle boarder was arrested for being in the middle of the ocean, and they arrested him, which kind of ironically eradicated any social distancing by arresting a paddleboarder. And then in India, I watched a video, a guy had a mask on, but they were beating him with sticks because apparently he violated some state order. All these things where we're seeing extreme force from the hand of the state against people who aren't social distancing, a term nobody even knew what it meant 3 months ago. This really does suggest a globalist police state that could take over. But I want to get back to St. Thomas Aquinas and Catechism of the Catholic Church. Anything to add to those, Ruben?
We have our soldiers have a duty to protect themselves and protect their partners. And when that threat is eliminated or it's quelled, then they can't just arbitrarily go in into the neighborhoods and start executing people in, you know, in their villages. It's just, that's disproportionate. That's straight murder. So, but St. Thomas does say that we have the right to defend ourselves and to defend others. And in fact, in law enforcement, they taught us in the academy that we have a duty, not just a right, we have a duty. And, you know, we could lose our job if we didn't have what it took to drop the hammer when we should have dropped the hammer, you know, we should have shot. That's called a coward. And so I know there have been people that have been fired for that.
Yeah. So let's talk about if this stuff is proportionate. As I'm seeing again, this person in India beat with sticks for not social distancing, people in Germany arrested for this. Let's look if this is actually proportionate. I'd actually like to look at some numbers of what a real plague is. And again, I don't want listeners out there to think that I'm saying only good Catholics are going to go without a mask or social distancing. That's fine if you do. I mean, I visited a friend of mine who's bedbound yesterday, and his dad wanted me to have a mask on, so I put a mask on. I think if I, you know, after my friend got attacked by these women for being in a supermarket without the mask, I'm just going to put it on because I have bigger battles to fight. So I don't want people out there to think I'm saying this isn't a real disease. You know, another example, I have an immunocompromised niece and my dad's almost 80. I'm not going to go around them because I've been traveling and bringing the sacraments to people. I'd be happy to go and do a COVID floor if I needed to bring extreme unction. So, you know, so my family doesn't want me around right now. That's no problem because I've been exposed to a lot of people and stuff. So that's okay if people disagree. But what I'd like people to see is that there is no right at this point to start arresting people. And this is why we're going to look at the numbers to see if this is actually a pandemic. So on the topic of proportionate means, let's look at some of the pandemics of history. Let's consider the Spanish flu of 1918. In 1918, Wikipedia tells us that there were up to 50 million deaths due to the Spanish flu in 1918. But the world's population was only 1.6 billion people, but up to 50 million deaths. So how many deaths out of a million people does that come to? For the Spanish flu of 1918, for every million people on the planet, 31,250 people died. Okay, so I'm going to give all these numbers for these five different things out of a million people. Imagine a million people, so a decently sized city, 31,000 of every 1 million people in the whole planet died from the Spanish flu. Even bigger than that, 14th century Europe, Black Death. This was by a bacteria called Yersinia pestis. And the population of Europe in the 14th century was just a little bit bigger than California, where Ruben is now. Encyclopedia Britannica says 25 million people died of the Black Death in 14th century Europe. Now, Europe in the beginning of that century, Europe had about 78 million people in Europe. So that's a little bit bigger than California, I think. So this would leave the population of Europe 53 million. So let's look at that. How many in Europe for every 1 million people that existed, how many of them died? 320,000 of every 1 million people died from Black Death. So we're talking one out of three Europeans died. I think some estimates are up to half. So for every million Europeans that existed in the 14th century, 320,000 died. Okay, let's look at COVID-19. Here in Colorado, for every million people, we've had 71 deaths. God rest their souls. I'm not poo-pooing this. This is a person who's either in heaven, hell, purgatory. Today at my memento for the dead, my main intention was those who've died. I think it's 168,000 worldwide. who've died of COVID. I'm not poo-pooing the fact that we really need to be praying for the people who are dying of this. And sure, we want to flatten the curve. And we, of course, want to save our older people who are susceptible to this. Okay. United States, 128 out of every 1 million people has died. And in the world, 24 people for every 1 million people have died from COVID. Okay. So let's compare number two and number five, the Black Death versus the entire world over. As even Johns Hopkins University seems to be saying that the curve is flattening, at least there's a reduction in the number of new cases on this. We're looking at 320,000 dead for every 1 million people for Black Death versus 24 people for every million people. Okay. Now, I know if there's any liberals out there listening, and I think there's very few, they'd say, well, that's because we're doing the social distancing. It's only 24 because we're actually doing it the right way. Okay, fine. But we still have absolutely no proportionate means for arrests, for forced vaccinations, for beating people with sticks at this point. This is why I'm proposing that although this virus is real, there's something behind this virus. This is sort of our segue, Ruben, into globalism and the end game. I was talking to an Army Ranger yesterday, and I said, okay, so if we're looking at 5G, if we're looking at forced vaccinations, if we're looking at digital certificates, we're looking at Jeffrey Sachs in the Vatican, what's the end game of all this? And he said depopulation. And that made total sense when he said it, because depopulation tied to the Vatican, bringing in people who are talking about this very thing, what is the liberal hierarchy going to float this under? It's going to be floated under the pretense of environmentalism, because everybody knows the Vatican can't come out and say, well, we want to depopulate the globe. But the flip side of the same coin is environmentalism. And this is why the pretense for sterilization, abortion, contraception, the pretense is always, or not always, is currently environmentalism. And so this makes a lot of sense, because if you're going to worship Mother Earth / Pachamama, we're really talking about a diabolical sacrificing of people to female demons, goddesses, instead of worshiping the one true God who commanded us, what, even before the fall, to be fruitful and multiply. So it's really ironic to me that everyone's saying, put on a mask and save a life, when most likely what's being commandeered behind the scenes on all this is an environmental globalism that really has the goal of reducing unwanted populations in our society, namely Blacks, Hispanics, Africans, and essentially anybody who's low on the socioeconomic scales, and probably anybody who even refuses to use contraception or abortion. I mean, if we were truly concerned about this stuff, think about it. Do you know how many young women on the pill have strokes and pulmonary embolisms because of the pill? I talked to somebody last week and her cousin had a stroke. And I said, do you think it was because of the pill? I was 95% sure she was going to tell me no. She told me, yeah, she thinks it probably was due to the pill. In fact, I went to a secular paramedic school, and they told us, if you show up and a young woman is hyperventilating, the first two questions you ask her is, are you on the pill? And do you smoke cigarettes? Are you on the pill and do you smoke cigarettes? Because we had to do what's called a differential diagnosis for a rule out pulmonary embolism. Now, sometimes, you know, young girls, young women are just hyperventilating because they had, you know, what we would call a psychosomatic event, that they're just a panic attack. But if there's a real pathophysiology with a young person who for no reason can't get their breath, especially a young woman, there's a very good chance she threw a pulmonary embolism secondary to this, to being on the pill. Do you realize if we were as vigilant about women being on the pill as we are about the 168,000 people that have died from COVID-19, it would be illegal to purchase an oral contraceptive?
Father, I think I'm all with you on the what I think is behind this. It's the depopulation. You know, Bill Gates has been highly involved in that, and it's kind of interesting is that, you know, he stepped down from Microsoft, and not only that, is that there were about a thousand other CEOs and leaders of presidents of companies that stepped aside right before the recession hit, right before the economy fell.
Is that right?
It's as if they knew something was coming, and so they were able to get, you know, sell their stock and get out of it before they took a hit. And that's not being reported. And all of a sudden, Bill Gates becomes the expert on, you know, vaccinations and diseases. And, you know, he didn't even finish college. I mean, I'm not saying he wasn't a genius in what he did,
sure,
what he did with Microsoft, but you see him on every news channel. He gives a lot of money to Planned Parenthood. I mean, his father was running Planned Parenthood at one point. So he's all about population control. The Chinese, as we know, the communist China, you know, that for many years they only allowed one child per family. I think they've increased it to two, but they quoted a couple of generals a few weeks ago. I was reading an article where a couple of generals were quoted back some time ago saying that their ultimate plan was they're going to have to take over parts of the United States because they need to put their people somewhere.
That's
They're running out of space. And so I think there's a larger thing network going on behind the scenes.
Right.
There's no doubt in my mind. And what really upsets me as a Catholic is that if we can go to the supermarket with a mask on, why can't we attend a service? I know friends who, from the SSPX that attend there. In fact, I attended a mass on during Lent, and it was right before they were told that they had to shut down. There was no masses going on in either the diocese that I live in or the Los Angeles diocese. No masses were, but the SSPX were still doing their masses, and they fully intended on running, you know, masses and sacraments and bringing, you know, having confession. And what happened was, you know, the local government put their foot down. They were even willing to add and increase the number of masses said on Sunday so that the attendance would be minimized, you know, the attendance would be spaced out and they could keep their distance. And so
that's what they've done here in Denver. Yeah, Robin, I can't help but think that we're actually looking at somewhat of a global vindication of SSPX, that, you know, all over the globe, the, you know, worship is paused and yet the mass from SSPX continues. Now, at the human level, everyone would say, well, yeah, that's because they've always been disobedient, blah, blah, blah. But I think if you look at this with the eyes of heaven, there's also the possibility this could be God's own vindication of Archbishop Lefebvre.
I think so too. And these priests understand, and you two do too, Father. You're willing to go to these COVID patients and bring them, you know, the sacraments. But
and I haven't yet. But if there's any listeners out there that that need me for anything in Colorado, I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, that's true. And I'm a big follower of your podcast, so I know that you're true to your word. And I just think that what they're doing is setting a precedent because they're saying the churches are not non-essential.
That's
so
right.
What is going to happen when this is over? There's going to be, you know, I would say a percentage of Catholics are going to say, well, you know what? We're not essential. That church is not essential. I'll just watch it on TV like I've been doing.
Yeah.
And so there'll be, I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to come back with fervor because the sacraments and the mass has been kept from them. So, you know, you long for what you've missed. So you don't, you learn to appreciate what you don't have anymore. But I think there's going to be the other side of the coin where people are going to say, well, it's, you know, they get used to this, they get complacent. And you see that what's happening is alcoholism is going up. These stores, liquor stores are selling booze off the shelves like crazy.
Mm.
Pot smoking, pornography is up. All these things
And what Forbes reported, I think Forbes reported 20 million unemployed about 5 or 6 days ago.
Jesus.
You know, I had a I don't know if you read this. I had a blog post go pretty viral where I supported all the bishops shutting down all the masses. And then people have been kind of noticing, wow, Father Nix's vocabulary seems pretty different from that. And someone finally publicly asked me on Facebook, well, do you regret that? And I said, I'm happy that the sacrilege at all the Novus Ordo is ended. So in that sense, I actually stick by that. Retrospectively, I guess I'm happy that there's a lot less sacrilege happening in the world. But I'm willing to admit I was wrong on how big this would go. Maybe the liberals are right that all the social distancing has in fact flattened the curve. But here's the point I want my listeners to hear. The real test of if there's going to be globalism here isn't what Father Nix or Ruben Nava, as a former or a retired LA County sheriff, says on this. The real test if globalism is involved is if the lockdown of the churches lasts longer than the lockdown of the rest of the world. Germany might be a litmus test for us. Here's what's happening in Germany. Germany said they're going to open the schools in May, but we don't need to open the churches. Now, is there a single liberal German bishop in Germany that's going to have the guts to stand up against it? No, they're not going to actually have a problem with that. But I think, you know, and people can say, well, we have to see if there's a surge in this whole COVID-19, and we have to really consider what's essential and non-essential. Mark my word, there's going to be places on this planet, probably in the United States, where churches are the last to open. And this ties back to the previous podcast that we had that I did with Mark Zarlingo, where we actually have to say only where the government is competent does the church actually have to obey. So back to my blog post where I said, you know, I support the bishops all closing down the masses. I said on one of these last podcasts, yes, if they did it on their own volition, not under the force of the government. But again, if by May, June, July, the rest of the world's opening up and churches stay closed, I think those of us who are talking about a plan against the church are going to be pretty clearly vindicated by that. But, you know, there's some other things that indicate – I don't know if you saw what happened out there in L.A. I don't know if you saw in Venice Beach they were filling in a skate park with sand. Look, if they didn't want kids – skating, they could cordon it off with police tape. What in the world are they doing filling that in with sand? I mean, that's almost like saying we permanently want our youth not to have fun outside. We permanently want the youth to be addicted to violent video games and pornography. When I see something like that, Ruben, I'm like, you know what? This isn't a little flu. This is truly a global takeover where they want us all shut down.
Yeah, I think and then the other thing that I look at as a police officer is the sale of guns has skyrocketed because the people are afraid. And these are the majority of them were like first time buyers, they were saying.
Interesting.
And it's because they saw that the police aren't going to be able to protect them and their families. And business owners, you know, their businesses were being shut down. So no one was going to be there. So the chance of burglars ransacking their property and their businesses, it was a good possibility.
Yeah.
And they've been trying to disarm us over here in California for years. And we have one of the most strict gun laws. And, you know, even the new sheriff here in LA County, he said that the gun stores were non-essential. And he shut them down only to be overrun by the Board of Supervisors. And they remained open. Because we have a right to, you know, the Second Amendment allows us to, you know, to bear arms and to protect ourselves, protect our family. And I'm not really keen on these first time people, you know, grabbing guns and have no business, possessing them with no training.
Sure.
But you know, it's their right. And I don't want that taken from them.
That's right.
And I don't believe in a police state. Honestly, I don't. I think we were talking off air, and you know, I don't believe my faith is what I follow first. That's, you know, I answer to Jesus Christ, and you know, reminds me of a time when they were having some protesters, some pro-lifers that were protesting at these abortion clinics, in the area that I policed, and they were demanding police come in and physically remove these people from the property. And I said, I can't do that in good consciousness. I'm not going to go. But I didn't want to be disobedient and not follow a direct order. So I did the next best thing, and I asked a friend of mine who was working a different assignment, would you replace me on the team? And because I can't do that in good consciousness. So, you know, a conscientious objector, I guess I was. And yeah. I didn't see any backlash from it. But and that would be the same thing here. If they started pulling people out of the homes, if I was still on the job, there's no way I could do that. In fact, good. I'll give you an example. The health department used to come into East LA, where I worked the majority of my career, and they would go down the boulevard and they would cite these Mexican immigrants who were pushing paleta carts and mm-hmm. Selling tacos and selling hot dogs on these little carts and other food items and
churros, big, churros.
The elote carts with the corn mm-hmm. with mayonnaise on them. I understand that some of that stuff could perish, go bad and spoil in the heat. But at some point I was on a team that had to go with these health inspectors, and I had no problem going ahead and telling these immigrants, hey, you might want to get off the street because they're coming right now. And,
nice.
And I didn't want to see them. That was their livelihood. They had no other yes, source of income. And to have them, to see what was done with those carts, they were taken from them and just yeah. taken as evidence, and the food was all destroyed and thrown away. And
yep.
that's kind of akin to what we're talking about is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think corn with mayonnaise sounds gross, but I think you did the right yeah. thing in warning them, because, you know, it's these big organizations that really do treat minorities as cattle. And Bill Gates has been under fire for this, for these forced sterilizations that he has spearheaded in Africa. And this is where the Vatican isn't totally detached from this. You were telling me about Jeffrey Sachs before we had started recording. And why is he so warmly received in the Vatican? And more importantly, what is his stance on all this stuff?
Well, Jeffrey Sachs is one of the globalists, and he speaks at the Vatican on a regular basis, apparently, and he was brought in recently. He's surrounded himself like the Jesuit Antonio Spadaro. Spadaro co-authored the most blinkered jerry-mades against Americans, and he's also anti-American. Jeffrey Sachs was on the record blatantly criticizing our president, and he was saying, I'm embarrassed to be an American. This is coming from my country, because the president has defunded a lot of things that he's, the United Nations. He's some of these treaties that have not been fair to the United States. He's against global warming and this climate change hysteria that these people talk about. And you mentioned it earlier, is that that's their way, this environment, that's their way of depopulating people. Sachs wants people dead through abortion and through abortifacients. And
wow.
he's a constant voice in the Vatican. So
wow.
Michael Matt exposed him very well, from the Remnant. And he was sitting there next to a bishop, I think it was Bishop Sarando. And when Sachs is trashing the U.S., Sarando is giggling, and he's just he delicately applauds. It's really creepy.
Mm.
So you can see Michael Matt's video on that if you want to find out more about it. But yeah, Sachs is one of the globalists that is all about population control.
Yeah, Ruben, one of the articles at LifeSite News said Vatican Academy's call for global response to pandemic ask governments to reduce nationalistic interests. What that means is we shouldn't be fighting this on the national level. We have to fight this pandemic, if it's such. Remember the numbers I gave earlier, and actually have a global response to it. And this is what LifeSite News says. A joint statement issued by the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences on March 20th gives interesting insights into the priorities of the Vatican regarding the COVID-19 crisis. Under the heading, Responding to the pandemic, lessons for future actions, and changing priorities, the scientific bodies attached to the Catholic Church reveal much of their globalist mindset while remaining totally silent with regard to the Catholic faith. What that means here is that the Vatican is employing people who believe that global warming exists due to human activity as part of the response to COVID-19, which essentially means that we need less people. If anyone tries to take your rights away as a Catholic, it's going to come in a very pastoral, smooth way before people come busting past your wall with battering rams and weapons. Be very, very vigilant that no one can take away your rights and your family's rights under the name of vaccinations, under the name of being pastoral, under the name of even global signatories to Vatican documents. Really, what this is going to come down to is actually a quote from an early 20th century Baptist, Oswald Chambers. I tweeted this out not too long ago, and we'll close with this quote. The remarkable thing about God is that when you fear God, you fear nothing else. Or is if you do not fear God, you fear everything else. Oswald Chambers. Christ is truly risen from the dead. He has not just destroyed sin forever, he has destroyed death forever. So we have absolutely nothing to fear, people. Nothing to fear at all. Take great hope. If Jesus can defeat the death of a crucifixion by his own power, by raising himself up, then you have nothing to fear except defending God. The remarkable thing about God is that when you fear God, you fear nothing else, whereas if you do not fear God, you fear everything else, including a fake plandemic.
Amen. Amen. You remember, they can kill the soul, but they can kill the body, but they can't kill the soul.
Amen. So keep that soul alive out there.
That's right.
God bless you. Thanks for joining us, Ruben.
Thank you, Father.